Material supplied by VMS may be used for internal review, analysis, or research only. Any editing, reproduction, publication, rebroadcasting, public showing, internet, or public display is forbidden and may violate copyright law.
Bloomberg New York continues. I'm Charlie Pellett. More now on our series on real estate here in New York City. We follow up on a story we brought you last week about office vacancies in Manhattan rising in the third quarter of 2008 to 7.6%. For more about that, we spoke with Marissa Manley, president of Commercial Tenant Real Estate Representation, a brokerage and consulting firm.
The tide has turned dramatically in favor of commercial tenants, and particularly so, I will say, in the last 4 to 6 weeks. When we were negotiating September-October timeframe, as the market was really beginning to move toward the tenants with some momentum, we actually had landlords saying to us that they were going to mothball space, that they didn't really feel a need to step into that breach, if you will. But in the time period since that, we've seen a very dramatic reversal with landlords coming to the market with terms substantially more favorable to tenants. And what we had been seeing over a period of some months was that many landlords were quietly giving tenants more concessions, more free rent, a better work letter allowance, but they were still maintaining high asking rents and relatively high taking rents. And that's quite dramatic.
What kinds of space are we talking about then in Manhattan? What types of commercial office space?
Well, everything from million square foot Class A buildings on Avenue of the Americas to smaller midtown buildings that might be on 44th Street, 45th Street between 5th and Madison. So I'm really talking about core Manhattan properties. We're not talking about the outliers that can't get a tenant in good times or bad. We're talking about major buildings owned by major institutional players.
How much of that vacant space, then, is from financial firms?
That's always a little hard to say. You know, some of the vacancies we're looking at might be from advertising agencies. They might be from law firms. Some clearly is from financial service firms. But when you start to have an aggregation of vacancy or availability in a building, frankly, the source doesn't matter anymore. When you get 20%, 30%, 40% availability, you know, whether it was a financial services firm that went out or just somebody who left for their own business reasons, the effect on the building is the same.
All right. Well, you've told us then that landlords are becoming more eager to wheel and deal. They don't want a mothball space. Who are some of the kinds of businesses then that are going ahead and moving into new space, perhaps negotiating great deals?
Well, I would say first and foremost, it's tenants that have to do something for the most part. Let's just take that category of tenant first, because obviously a market like this, while it certainly creates favorable conditions for tenants, is a double-edged sword because many tenants are seeing a great deal of uncertainty in their own business. So to that extent, some tenants are holding back. Some tenants are holding back because they're waiting for even better terms. But many tenants are holding back because there's a little bit of uncertainty. But tenants who must move forward, whether they have a lease expiration, whether they have an absolute need to accommodate growth, those tenants who are in the market are certainly doing well. And are they industry specific? Not so much in New York. I can talk about industries where there is demand related to the nature of the industry. That's in the medical world, and that's in the education world. But when we look at Manhattan and we're looking at a central business district which has a variety of industries always at work, there's not a clear trend here in Manhattan, so it's much more opportunistic.
When landlords then are increasingly willing to negotiate, what, if anything, does that suggest about the market? Does that indicate that things are going to get worse rather before they get better because of the fact that landlords would like to lock in a deal, even if it's perhaps not the optimum deal?
Absolutely, and for a couple of different reasons. First of all, when we look at where all of the unemployment figures are, and when we talk about the Office of Budget and so on projecting up to $175,000 job losses through 2009, we know that that will contribute to an increased vacancy rate, an increased availability rate. And when companies let people go, they don't immediately offer their space to the market.
When it comes to vacant office space, how does Manhattan compare to Brooklyn, Queens, and across the Hudson in places like Jersey City?
You know, we're fortunate here because of the high barriers to entry in terms of small available space. However, the dramatic increase that we've seen in the last quarter, bringing our vacancy rate up above 10%, puts us closer, but we're still seeing vacancy rates in the teens in the suburban areas. Brooklyn, Queens, a little harder to compare, Charlie, because they simply don't have the density of office space that really competes with Manhattan. Now, you could look at a Stamford, you could look at a Greenwich, you can look at a Jersey City, and you can talk a little more appropriately about Class A space. And in all of those markets, we're certainly seeing higher vacancy rates. And in some of these submarkets, we're seeing vacancy rates that approach 20%.
Marissa, how long have you been involved in the real estate industry, and how does the period that we are now in compare to what you might have seen in previous downturns?
Well, Charlie, I formed my firm in 1989, and I had been in the industry before that for several years, so certainly we've seen some ups and downs. And if you look at the statistics, Charlie, we certainly have seen worse statistics in previous recessions. And many people who are in the real estate world will remember landlords at one point were saying, stay alive till 95. So in the early 90s, certainly, there were a lot of low rents and a lot of vacancies. We had periods when a lot of companies were moving out of New York City en masse. I don't think we see that, but what I do think we see in this environment that is quite, quite different is the rapidity of the fall, the rapidity of the change, particularly in the base rent structure. Again, we've been seeing these escalations, I'm going to say for a period of several months, really start to move in tenants' favor. But it's only in the last 6 weeks that we've really seen dramatic changes in the base rent indicator. And that's a different type of activity from previous downturns in the market.
When you say changes in the base rate indicator, what sorts of changes are you looking at in terms of perhaps a percentage?
Sure. Well, let me give you a couple quick examples. So I can think of a building. Again, this is a Class A building. Short while ago, they were asking $140 a square foot. Now the asking rent is $100 a square foot. And I'll guarantee you that the taking rent is below that. So we look at a 40% difference in asking rent in a short period of time. Another situation, perhaps a little less dramatic, asking rent was $75 a square foot. We put in an offer for our client. We received a counter from the landlord at $50 a square foot. So that's a 33% drop from the ask to what the landlord indicates is the taking rent. And on top of that, Charlie, we had work letter contribution worth nearly a year's rent, and we had free rent. So by the time we added up all those values, we're probably looking at a 48% difference between the landlord's asking rent and the taking rent based on just those few economic terms. Now, there's obviously a lot more to negotiate when you negotiate a lease, and there are a lot of other non-rent terms that could work in that tenant's favor. But just on those three terms.
Do these tend to be isolated examples, or are those typical of the kinds of deals that you've negotiated?
No, well, you know, every building is different, Charlie. So what's typical is a little hard to say, but this is clearly a market-wide trend. I can tell you about buildings on 3rd Avenue. I can tell you about buildings on Avenue of the Americas. I can tell you about buildings on 45th Street. I can tell you about large tenants, and I can tell you about small tenants. I'll give you a small tenant example. The tenant had thought about a renewal. The landlord was very unresponsive. It was basically as is, take it or leave it. Since that conversation, we've gotten them a variety of concessions. And in addition, the landlord has agreed to change the electric rate from about $5.80 a square foot to about $3 a square foot. Well, that discussion wouldn't even have been on the table 6 months ago. And this is quite a small tenant.
Marissa Manley, president of Commercial Tenant Real Estate Representation, a brokerage and consulting firm, speaking with us about the commercial real estate market here in New York.